means you're sorry. You're standing at my door. Guess this means you take back all you said before. Like how much you wanted. Hi, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. We're so glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues of men and women who have recently been released from incarceration, and we deal with the issues of post-incarceration life here. We have got a great show for you today. On the show is the one and only Mr. Ray Hill. Ray is instrumental in getting ex-offenders their right to vote back in Texas. He's also helped to get telephones installed into all the prisons in Texas. Ray is an ex-con himself, and he's going to give some excellent insight into post-incarceration life. All that and more coming up next on The Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. Hey everybody, I just wanted to give you a heads up on what's coming up in the next couple of weeks on the show. Next week we have Mr. Steve Ulsher. Steve has written a book called Journey to You, and you'll want to hear the message that he has for ex-offenders. We also have coming up soon Mr. Mark Anthony. Mark Anthony is called the Psychic Attorney, and I think we're going to have some fun with him, but he has a very powerful message for ex-offenders about how to deal with our past, sadness in our past. All that and more is coming up in the next couple of weeks on The Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers.
Stingers, Martha Hooper, Rachel Singers, Lonnie Mack, Twang, and Eddie Hisman, Ring, we're going steady, take it easy, take me high, lie, lie, house of fire, locomotion, poker, passion, deeper purple satisfaction, baby, baby, gotta, gimme, getting hotter, Sammy's cooking, Leslie, Cora, Richie, Valens, end of story, Mahavista, Fujiyama, Kamasutra, Rama, Lama, Richard Perry, Spectre, Barry, Righteous, Archer, Nielsen, Harry, Shimmy, Jimmy, Coco, Poppin', Fats, back and finger poppin'.
We have on the phone with us Ray Hill. Ray is the host of The Prison Show, which airs at 9 p.m. Central Fridays on KPFT 90.1. We're going to put some links up for that in just a minute here. He, I think, is a Houston native. He grew up in the Galena Park area, I believe. Is that right, Ray?
Actually, I was born in the Heights.
In the Heights.
Lived through the North Shore area whenever I was about 5 years old and spent the rest of my time out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got a huge list of awards and accomplishments. The First Amendment Award from the Houston Trial Lawyers Association, the Brenda Thomas Trailblazer Award, the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Houston ACLU. Back in 1968, Ray was the co-founder and former board member of Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 in Houston. He's been the co-founder of the Houston Human Rights League, very active in the gay and lesbian community. And now in 1970, Ray was sentenced to 160 years in prison. He hit the books and managed to get that knocked down to 8 years with trustee status and served, I believe it was 4 years and 4 months, if I remember correctly. And
well, it's about 10 or 17 days, depending on who's doing the counting.
Hey, listen, I count every minute. since that time, Ray has hosted The Prison Show for some 30 plus years. Ray, how are you?
I am well, thank you.
It is so nice to talk to you. I got to tell you before we get started that I used to listen to the show all the time on Darrington. It's just a thrill to have you here. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, you're welcome. I've always been concerned about what people who listen to the show think about how well we are doing our assigned responsibilities, but I don't get much feedback in that regard. Most letters that I get say, we need to tell you this or that's going on so you can make news out of it. Would you do this or that or the other for me? So
yeah,
nobody gives us any feedback on how well we're doing. And So I guess that since that's not a topic, I guess if we were really doing a poor job, we'd get a lot of feedback.
Hey, listen, everybody that I've ever talked to greatly appreciates what you do, Ray, and likes listening to the show. I was on some other units that were further out west, and I wasn't able to get it. But when I got to Darrington, I got to listen to it all the time, and I used to look forward to it. It was, I would say, with Commissary and Chow Time, it's right up there with Visitation and one of those things I would look forward to.
Oh, yeah, right. There are a few things to look forward to, but Mercy, you feel badly if you miss them.
Hey, I'm just curious, Ray, do you ever think back on those days in prison? Is it something that you've gotten past? Do you still think about, you know, your day-to-day life when you were incarcerated?
Well, Rodney, in a very real sense, I'm still in prison. If only by proxy via the radio show, I was visiting a woman in the hobby unit Saturday. In the last 2 weeks, I've been to three other units to talk with recovery groups and all of that. But when you go down to the 160-year sentence, you don't think you're going to discharge anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a mindset that you're going to be there for the rest of your life. And it's no point in changing that. Just keep on keeping on.
Mm. How did the prison show get started, Ray? How did all that start?
Well, I thought always that there needed to be some form of media to shed light on criminal justice issues.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the program that I envisioned was a program that I would go on the air and I would teach the great unwashed all of the things they do not know about prisons, to wit. Somebody in your household or family gets arrested and they go to jail, get a call from the jail. First thing you do is, oh my God, they're in jail, we've got to get them out. So you run around and you meet these nice people they call bail bondsmen. And somehow or other, those wizards are able to figure out exactly how much resources you can put your hands on. And that's just about what it takes to get them out of prison. And then you wake up the next morning and you don't have any resources. You're not going to get a court-appointed attorney in a bonded-out case.
Mm-hmm.
So you realize, oh, my God, I need a lawyer. And the first time you're up, you don't know how to tell the difference between a lawyer in a clown suit and a clown in a lawyer suit. And so things just kind of go downhill from there. And everybody makes the worst damn fool mistakes you can imagine. And they make the mistakes after it's too late to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the program I wanted to do. And so I went on the air. In 1980, I became general manager of KPFT, and one of the first things I did as general manager is give myself time for that show.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried doing that show for a couple of months, but what didn't work is that I never got that audience. The audience I got were people already in prison and their families and their lawyers and everybody that I was trying to educate already had all of that information in hand. They knew everything that I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you don't do radio for the audience you don't have. Instead, you do radio for the audience you do have. And the audience I did have was prisoners, and they didn't need to know all that stuff, so I started trying to figure out how to make that work, and then one day that answer came whenever someone called me as I was going on the air to ask me to give a message to one of the inmates out there that was listening. His mother had saved for a long time to go visit him on the wind farm. We had bad weather that day. There had been something happened on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And she got run off the road, and she wasn't going to make it, and she wanted me to tell him that she couldn't make it, but she would start trying to reserve resources for some future meeting. And as I'm talking to her, I hear weather sounds, I hear traffic sounds. She and I had only talked for a minute and a half, She'd been on hold waiting for me before I got on the phone, and the operator intervened and said, deposit 75 more cents. And I said, oh my God, this is great radio. So I told the operator, can I reverse the charges and discharge the bill? And she said, yes, because I didn't know the lady had 75 cents. Mm-hmm. And so I run in there and put it on the air. And when she started telling me to tell her son, I said, he's listening, you tell him. And then after she started talking to her son, the operator intervened and said, your 3 minutes are up. You want to continue this call? I said, yes, operator, we do want to continue it for as long as it lasts. Thank you very much. Do not interrupt us again. I wanted all of that in there because, as a journalist, that unexpected telephone call mm-hmm. told more than I could describe in my own voice and words on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And it told a fascinating story. Of course, when I walked in the station the next week, all of the lines were blinking. We were booked up.
Wow. And so the prison show was born.
Yeah.
I'm a little confused about when you got out of prison, you didn't immediately start the prison show at that time.
No, I came back to Houston. I had founded KPFT before I went to prison. That,
right.
KPFT is one of my accomplishments because four of us got together in 1968 and said we need this kind of radio in Houston, and we went on the air in March of 1970. Well, in November of 1970, I went to prison.
What I'm curious about is, and what would be very relevant to my audience, is when you got out of prison, what was your process? I mean, you had already done some things like establish or help to co-found KPFT, but what did you do in terms of a job search, things along those lines? What was your process and the steps you took to get yourself going again?
Yeah, well, since the statute of limits has passed, I can tell you that I went to prison for what the newspapers called $4.5 million worth of commercial burglaries. And I didn't spend all that money while I was in prison, and I didn't have to restore any of it.
Oh, I see.
And so I still had money left when I got out.
I see.
And as a matter of fact, it was discovered while I was still down there that I had overpaid my income tax by about $89,000.
Right.
So I got a fat check from the government. And the warden said, you ever put this in your commissary account? And I said, no, sir, I don't draw interest on my commissary account.
No, I used to hear guys talking about that. There's no interest on the commissary. You put,
right.
put a chunk
That's
of change
right.
in there.
So I transferred it to an interest-bearing account and had not touched money in that account before I got out. But I got out thinking, of course, I got a relatively short notice, so it was a shock to get out. And to be perfectly honest with you, I was more afraid to get out than I had been to go in, because going into prison, you go to jails a few times, and you make bond or you don't. And so you kind of know the routine before you get there.
Mm-hmm.
But after you get there, especially with a 160-year sentence, you don't think about how do I survive till I get out, because with that kind of number, you ain't getting out.
Mm-hmm.
So you completely immerse yourself into that culture, and once you've totally adapted to that culture, you're ill-prepared to get out.
Mm-hmm.
The prison systems don't work very well because they have a failure rate of 70%,
mm-hmm.
which means that 70% of people who go to prison the first time will be back the second time, and 80% of the people who go the second time will see their third sentence. And so you can see the pattern developing here. Any other area of private enterprise or government that had a 70 or 80% failure rate, we would discard that and do something differently. But in prisons, we're so eager to get revenge. So I'm ill-prepared to get out. One thing I know for sure, that I'm going to be nobody for the rest of my life. And that when I do run out of money, it's going to be a struggle to maintain. Well, that latter thing is certainly true,
mm-hmm.
because when I ran out of money, I lived on food stamps and rent subsidy and disability insurance I did today. But I knew that I needed to have some structure in my life.
Structure, okay.
Structure. I mean, prisons are what? Structure.
Right.
Well, what's the closest thing to prisons structure-wise? Colleges.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I went to what they call Texas Rehabilitation Commission then, and they call it something different now, but they call it Texas Rehabilitation, and I conned those people into getting me into school, paying for books and tuition, because I thought at the time I'd be very frugal with my money. Mm-hmm. And you know that students in school spend money like drunken sailors, so...
Mm-hmm. I got two of them doing that now. I understand.
So you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
So I got the government to pick up the tab, and I went down, and as I'm signing in, there's a spiral notebook taped to the wall, and it says, sign up for student government. Then what does that cost? And they tell me, well, it doesn't cost anything. And so I sign up for that, and then I go to the table, and they said that where they're putting down candidates for a thing, and someone was running for all of the legislative branch, all of the student senate positions, but nobody was running for president. So I signed up to run for president, not knowing that there was an incumbent that had not yet signed up but would be. Mm-hmm. And so I went on, and I found myself, I was in a campaign. Well, I know about politics. You got a campaign. And what I did for campaigning was I adopted the slogan, give a convict a break.
What suggestions, Ray, would you have for people that are getting out right now in terms of employment? I know this is... not particularly your area, but I just want to tap your brain. We tap everybody's brain here about jobs.
Okay, because I got some very good advice.
Good.
From a guy by the name of David Cook.
Okay.
David Cook is not the one you see that pays underwriting for PBS programming. Mm-hmm. He's a rich, fat cat right winger that does that to try to tidy up an otherwise dirty image.
Okay.
David Cook is an ex-convict at federal time. He wrote a book about overcoming the dragon or something to that effect, which is his life story about being an ex-convict and making traction. Mm-hmm. His advice is you go to a place where you know there is work. And you get through to the boss man. So obviously he's not talking about corporation. He's talking about some small business. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, look, I want the job that you can't get anybody to do. You know, the job where somebody comes to work and they work a couple of weeks and they say, I'm going to put up with this crap and they leave. I want that job. And so you're not asking for anything that the employer doesn't need. Somebody take his worst job. And you take that and you do whatever that is very well. Now, that's kind of like I survived prison. Mm-hmm. When I got to prison, I didn't know anything about prisons. I didn't know about all that stuff. I didn't even have a concept. I thought I was going to be a successful burglar for the rest of my life. I wind up in prison, but I get assigned a maintenance bookkeeping job. And so I became the consummate bureaucrat. Is a maintenance bookkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
The water run better, and the lights stayed brighter, and all of the fans worked.
Right.
And all of the heaters worked. I made it my point to go find out what is needed to maintain prisons, and I did that flawlessly. And it wasn't long before somebody noticed, wait a minute, this guy's good at this. Mm-hmm. And the construction superintendent came over and said, would you come over and help us with the... construction books. And as long as I was on the Ramsey, I was both the maintenance bookkeeper and the construction bookkeeper, because the construction job came with a truck.
Ooh.
Pickup. I had my own keys, so wow. I could get around between the offices. But the idea is you go to work, and whatever you get, you do that very well, and you immediately start looking for another job that's better than the one you get, so that there's a continuous improvement. Now, what prevents people from doing that? One, a passive nature. A lot of people say, I want a job, but they really don't. Because unless you're willing to do the work, you really don't want a job. So admit that and just go ahead on from there. But if you really want a job, you want to do that job very well. And upon doing that job, you'll either get promoted, which is a likelihood, or you'll find another job and you want to do that job very well. But always make each job an improvement over the last one. If you're not doing yourself better, don't leave the job you've got.
It sounds like what I hear you talking about there, underlying all that, is an issue of attitude. And
yes.
We talk about that on the show.
If I could just convince convicts they were worth as much as I know they are worth. See, the problem with convicts is we get to believing what everybody else says about us. Well, I've dealt with a population like that before. That was gay folks. You go back to gay in the 60s. Gay folks in the 60s did not like themselves and did not like one another. You can't build a society out of people who don't like themselves and don't like one another. So I had to change that attitude before I could build a society to organize politically.
So we're talking about attitude, working on building positive self-esteem,
right?
Those sorts
pretty
of things.
Basic stuff.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things we deal with here, Ray, is we talk a lot about just general coping skills. And I was curious, with you, you deal with such heavy issues all the time on the prison show and also hosting Execution Watch. How do you handle that?
Well, I handle that with the resignation that I can't do anything about reality. I don't like doing the Execution Watch. As a matter of fact, I despise doing Execution Watch.
Mm-hmm.
But it needed to be done, and so Elizabeth and I got together, and I said, Elizabeth, if you'll actually produce this, I will provide the voice.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do this. And because she cared very strongly about execution issues, she had been a volunteer in the prison show for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I don't produce that show. Elizabeth does it. And we couldn't do it without the technical skills of Otis McClay.
Mm-hmm.
So because we're using KPFT's HD2 channel and the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And that I need somebody to handle the technical. But it's actually Elizabeth's show. I'm basically just talent to come in and do the voice. I don't work off of a script, but all of the background information, all that has been researched before I get there.
So the way that you deal with this has to do with, you know, just accepting that things are the way they are and taking...
Well, you remember that wonderful quote from Bill Clinton, that depends on what the word is means?
Absolutely.
You know, I take off of that and just accept that what is.
It is, isn't it?
and we have to work with the leftovers.
I want to switch gears here just a little bit. As time goes on, it just seems like, and now I don't know this for a fact, but a little birdie told me that you've got some friends up there in Austin. And my question for you is, it just seems like whenever there's new criminal justice legislation, it always tightens the screws instead of loosening them a little bit. And I'm wondering, Ray, do you ever foresee that changing?
Well, I was on a panel just this last Thursday with Jerry Madden. He is the chair of the Corrections Committee in the South,
mm-hmm.
in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry is a conservative Republican from a redneck district. Fortunately, he does not have a prison in his district because he does. So therefore, he has got the freedom to look at these issues without the political fallout of Alan Hightower, who was the representative from Huntsville and also chair of that committee.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Madden and I get along very well together, although we come from very different political points of view. Because
mm-hmm.
I think both of us have one thing in common, and that is a pragmatist. Practically, we could not get Texas legislature to install telephones, for inmate access. So we worked on it for 4 sessions of legislature.
Which would be That's 8 years, wouldn't it?
8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And each time we lost. We carried both the House and the, did not get it before the Senate because the governor announced he was going to veto it on the next year, so that's 10 years. On the 12th year, we were able to get it on the floor of the Senate. It passed. On the floor of the House, it passed. And then the governor would have to veto it. He neither vetoed it nor signed it mm-hmm. before it became law on its own.
Talk about so fence straddling.
I beg your pardon?
Talk about fence straddling, non-committal.
Right. So you spend 12 years getting the legislation passed, and then it took another 4 years to install it.
You know, from a political point of view, I have absolutely no knowledge of politics at all, but it just seems to me, I mean, does Rick Perry understand what a huge constituency is involved in the criminal justice system in terms of people that are ex-felons who receive their right to vote in Texas, the families of people that are incarcerated and families of ex-offenders? Does he have any kind of idea, do you think, or does anybody?
He doesn't care, and he doesn't want that constituency. Rick Perry sees service in state government as the opportunity to win a rednecking contest. And that's not rednecking like blue-collared people working in the sun, which it originally meant. My father, by that definition, was a redneck. I'm the first generation of heel males that did not push a mule through a field for a living. And when Raymond was starved off the farm, he went to work in heavy industry, worked for the shipyards.
Mm-hmm.
So we're rednecks in the classic definition, but that has come to mean prejudice-motivated political people. And Rick Perry thinks that serving as governor is winning the rednecking contest.
It seems like am I wrong in thinking that there is a huge constituency of people that have been touched by the criminal justice system?
Well, I mean, numerically, the trouble of it is that although the restoration of the right to vote, what they call the Ray Hill Bill in Texas Senate in 1985, because unlike you, I do know politics. I do know how politics works. Mm-hmm. I do know how to play that game. So in 1985, the legislature passed a bill that would restore citizenship to all former offenders after they get off paper. Originally, it was 2 years after the get-up paper, but mm-hmm. Harold Dutton, Representative North Houston, peeled the 2 years off later. So now, if you're off paper and you're not registered to vote, you're not taking advantage of rights that
absolutely.
You have.
Absolutely.
And so that was very important to me, but the whole idea was by the time I approached the legislature with restoring my right to vote, I had about 150,000 votes in my pocket because I had organized gay and lesbian communities in Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, and Austin.
Right. Well, Ray, listen. Listen, Ray, I want to thank you for all that you've done and all that you do, and I also want to congratulate you on your many accomplishments. You're a good cat, man. And
the only thing I've got to watch for at this point is not to overstay my welcome.
Ray, listen. Ray Hill is the host of the Prison Show on KPFT. It airs at 9 p.m. Central Fridays and Execution Watch on KPFT.
You can get both of them on the obvious website.
Right.
PrisonShow.org and ExecutionWatch.org.
And I will definitely put links for those. Ray, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
My name's Rodney Mathers. We're going to be right back after this.
One thing for yourself. Now you're off with someone else and I'm alone. You see, Honey, I thought that I might keep you for my own. Amy, what you wanna do?
Hey, everybody. You know, I bet there's a bunch of you out there that like to play a little music, play some guitar. I know about a product that can really help you with your playing. If you know a few chords, it's something called the Jam Buddy chord chart. And the way it works is if you know a few chords, it helps you organize your playing in such a way that you can play a bunch of different songs in a bunch of different keys. It's called the Jam Buddy chord chart. The way you find it is you go to angiesbanjo.com. That's angiesbanjo.com. And you click on the link for the Jam Buddy chord chart, and you're going to get a free sample of the chart, and you'll see what I'm talking about. This thing is cool, and it'll help you with your playing, I promise. Check it out. It's called the Jam Buddy chord chart. Well, that's all we have time for this week. I want to thank my special guest, Mr. Ray Hill. Ray has got some excellent insight into post-incarceration life. Ray, thank you again for being here. And I want to remind everybody of something. If God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers.